right, good evening. So, how many of y'all had a busy day today? Yeah, a few? Just some hands. How many of y'all are retired and every day is Saturday? I was waiting for this one to come up. All right. Well, for those of you who are retired, we're looking for some energy out of you tonight to carry the rest of us, okay? Is that a reasonable expectation? Well, what was that? I heard a lot of chatter over here. I don't know. Oh, okay. So, okay. Yeah, there's always that. We should never assume that it was easy just because it was a retired day, right? All right. If y'all will, we're going to look in the book of Matthew, chapter 7. Matthew 7. So I tell you, the last few services, you know, the teaching and preaching up here has been pretty awesome. Brother Jamie Sunday night, Brother Ken Sunday morning. And to me, the last few services were Brother Ken was preaching on there. Just really resonates with me, his messages are there. And I want to remind you, because I think he's tapped into something, a truth there that we don't often realize in our day-to-day. What he talked about was Elijah, you know, by the brook Cherith, and then Elijah with the widow woman, the widow woman with the buck or the barrel of meal, and the message is around just being in your place and being where God wants you to be, and it's there that He can bless you, it's there that He can take care of you, it's there that we can tap into His strength. And we just work so hard in our own efforts. And if we can ever get that concept of just find that spot, and that spot's where God can, you know, God can really use us. God can really, we can really leverage His power. God can bless us. But the flip side of that's true too. If we're not there, if we're not in that spot where God would have us be, then it's real hard for Him to bless us, because the blessings are there. And I don't want to re-teach or re-preach Brother Ken's message, but those two messages, I heard two of them. There might have been more because we were out of town 1 week, but I'd say those were worth burning the CD for and having around, because there's some fundamental truth there that we often lose sight of. So tonight I got a simple message. I want to talk a little bit about self-righteousness. Talk a little bit about self-righteousness. There was a little boy. His name was Tommy. So Tommy was out on the playground during recess and was picking on the other children on the playground. And one of his favorite ways of taunting the kids was to make ugly faces at them. Anybody in here ever been guilty of that? Okay, whatever. Don't admit it. But Miss Smith, the teacher, who was in charge of supervising recess, saw Tommy doing this, and she took him aside and she said, "You know, Tommy, when I was a little girl, I was told that if I made ugly faces, my face would freeze and always stay like that." So Tommy looked up at her and replied, "Well, Miss Smith, you were warned." So in Matthew chapter 7, verse number 1, it says, "Judge not, that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, Let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye." You know, this is a problem that we all have right here. I can tell you, in every conflict in my life, Every area where I have conflict, it is extremely easy for me to tell you why that other person's wrong. It just is. I can give you the list. It comes very quickly. But when we try to look inside and say, well, what part am I in this? Where am I wrong? You struggle, right? You struggle to come up with those reasons because the problems with the other person is just overwhelming. And they're very clear. And obviously, if the other person would change or the other half of the situation would change, everything would be okay. But very often we don't see ourselves. We can't see past the mote that's in our own eye, but we can see very clearly the beam. We can't see past the beam that's in our own eye. We see very clearly the mote that's in our brother's eye or our sister's eye. It's evident that we don't see ourselves. Have you ever looked at a photograph of yourself, like from an angle that you don't usually see in the mirror, and go, "That's not me. I don't look like that. That person's got like at least 10 pounds more than I've got on them. You sure that's me?" Or, you know, you walk by a mirror and go, "Wait a minute, does my hair really do that?" You ever done that? Where you see yourself from a different angle? But very often we see ourselves from the same view, physically and also spiritually, and our personalities as well. I'm reminded of a Twilight Zone episode I watched when I was a kid. And this episode stuck in my mind. I might have been 10 years old when I saw it. I remember I used to sit up late and those old 50s and 60s, I don't know how old they really were, but they were black and white, would play, and I would watch them, and they'd make you think. Well, this one episode, there was a guy that was, there was a crime that was committed, and this crime was committed by a very old lady, like gray hair and old lady dress and the whole deal. And during the investigation, you know, the crime was clearly by an old lady. But there was a distinctive mark on the old lady's face. It was like this really big mole, like a really big beauty mark. And the weird part about it is there was a man in the picture, a younger man, who also had that mole. And he was dressing up like this old lady and committing these crimes. And they said, "We know it's you. Because it's described, the description is that with that big mark on the criminal's face." And he walked over to the mirror and he looked at the mirror and he says, "I have no flaw on my face." He had for years been looking at himself in the mirror from the angle that hid the mark on his face. So he didn't even know. He had become blind to the fact that he had this mark on his face. So he exposed himself in this crime. Okay, so I wonder how often when we look at ourselves, we don't see what's there, but everybody else around us can see very clearly what's going on with us. And some people who are close enough to us are willing to tell us, and sometimes we still can't hear it, right? But that doesn't mean it's not fair. And that doesn't mean that we don't need to deal with it. So, you ever been told, "Hey, you came across like a real bad person. You came across like a real jerk in that interaction." You ever been told that? You go, "What? I didn't mean anything by it. That's not where my heart was." I've been told that, Brother Lee. What's going on over there, brother? Every now and then, maybe? It's Jane, right? Yeah, I know it's Jane. Yeah, we all know it's Jane, Brother Lee. We all know, brother. We have blind spots. We have these blind spots. And I tell you, there's this gentleman on my job. He's a consultant. And he comes in when there's an issue. And we hire him, not me, the central office hires him, to help very senior leaders. And he comes in and he interviews the people around him. He interviews them, and he spends weeks just kind of being in their environment and sitting in their meetings. And I've seen him with at least five or six different leaders now, and all he does is take notes. And he takes notes, and he takes notes, and he doesn't say a word. Then you start noticing the the leader, their behavior starts changing. He's an executive coach, is what he is. And I was talking to him one day, and I go, you know, what you do is really neat, because I've seen you transform a lot of people. He said, well, what I do is I just show them the things they can't see. Everybody knows those behaviors, so if they're in a room and they do something wrong, the whole room reacts, but they're blind to it. You know, because they're at such a high level that it makes everyone react. And he says, I just spend time with them, and I make sure that they see themselves the way everybody else sees them. And when they truly see the way everybody else sees them, they start making adjustments and they start changing. What would it be like if we had somebody like that following us around all day and talking to us and telling us where we were falling short and where we were not doing the right things? That'd be in my life, that would be a pretty busy person. And I'm not sure I'd be able to take it. But I guarantee you it would be something that would probably help me. And it might help, I don't know, two or three other people in here. So you know, cars these days have blind spot detectors on them. If you got a car that's fairly new, most of them are coming standard now. Some of the older models that were higher end have them. And I just got my first vehicle that has it. And Jennifer's had one for a while. And you start to depend on these lights that come up either, you know, kind of near your mirror. Anybody got that going on? Yeah. So when a car comes up into your blind spot, you know not to go over into the lane and hit them. And I barely even look back anymore. I just use my blind spot in my mirror, and it's like, okay, I'm in, I'm going, I'm good. I wonder what kind of riches Brother Nick over here could make if he could come up with a blind spot detector for human beings. You know, something that, you know, when we're doing something that we can't see but everybody else can, it gives you like a little shock. I bet you could make a bunch of money on that, Brother Nick. You ought to come up with that, bro. That's a good plan for you. He gave me a thumbs up. Y'all couldn't see that. I think it's coming. You know, you could just make it shock to where it knocks them all the way to the ground, sort of thing. That'd be the way I'd expect. Do you imagine that, though? I probably would never be able to stand up. I mean, it'd just be constant. If y'all will, turn over to the book of Samuel, 1 Samuel 16. Everybody else knows, but we don't know. Everybody else can see it. How in the world will we figure it out for ourselves? 1 Samuel 16 and verse 7. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not unto his countenance or in the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. So even though we got all this messiness going on with us, and even though we got all these blind spots, God can look down on the inside, and God can see what He's trying to make us into. God has always done big things with very unlikely people. He sent the Samuel to find and anoint a new king. With David, he looked past all the strapping brothers and came up on the little ruddy lad named David. When he chose a man to command Pharaoh to let his people go, he chose Moses, who was slow and stammering of speech, to stand in boldness in front of Pharaoh and make that demand. Now, why wouldn't he pick someone that's articulate and that can make a case to let my people go? He doesn't need somebody that has ability. He needs somebody that's willing. And if Moses had stepped up with all that ability, it would have been Moses that made it happen. It would have been under Moses' power. He chose fishermen, a tax collector, and others whose occupation aren't even mentioned, but they left everything and followed Christ. In the Greek, the word disciple means follower or learner. how can we learn anything if we already know everything? Yeah, me too, brother. Have you ever been called a know-it-all? I remember when I was a teenager, I had it all figured out. We just had an intern working in our area, been with us 4 to 6 weeks, really short gig, gave us a whole list of all the stuff that's wrong and how we ought to go fix it all. Oh my goodness. I remember when I was that, I don't want to be ugly, aggressive and smart, you know. And I still, oh my goodness, I still think I know so much. But when I look back, if you compare the teenage self and the 20 self to me now, the things I really think I know are way down here compared to where I was. Because you learn that you're just not as smart as you think you are. And look, I'm not making fun of anybody, because that's called youth. That's called youth, right? Wisdom comes with age, and being humbled over and over and over and over, and learning that the thing you thought you knew, you really didn't know so much, and the thing you thought you'd figured out, maybe you weren't so smart. It just keeps coming up. But that know-it-all characteristic is also, in most cases, a blind spot. It's us. And you know what? We tend to know a whole lot about other people and what other people should do, too. You ever had it, you know, maybe heard somebody or been part of a gossip session where, you know, just for the record, you know, we have to take this person and we have to kind of line them out and make sure that, just for the record, you know, what their situation is and what we think of them. You know, not that we're judging or anything, but just, you know, you just need to go on record and kind of keep that, you know, it's got to be said. You know, we ever done that? Yes, we have. There's a famous quote by Eleanor Roosevelt. She says that great minds discuss ideas, average minds discuss events, and small minds discuss people. I think we're all guilty of falling into the small mind category every now and then. But I tell you, I think we're all guilty of it. But I'll tell you, if we spend most of our time focused on other people, we're certainly not spending enough time focused on ourselves, are we? And anybody that is always in a position where they're talking about somebody else when you're gathering up with them, or you know, you're kind of connecting with them, I don't mean to hurt anybody's feelings, but I just want to break it out real easy here that when they're talking to other people, they're probably talking about you. Because if that's our business to talk about people, then that's probably what we're doing. And you don't talk about the people who are there. So if you're not there, you could be the topic. I think it's pretty neat how Facebook has worked out. Facebook has kind of taken our need to know about one another and our need to be kind of connected to one another, and it's taken it to a whole new level, right? It's made it electronic. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it definitely gets to the very nature of our needing to know other people's business. Because you can spend time just, you know, on the screen kind of, well, what's this person up to? What's this person up to? Well, I wonder what's going on over there. Oh, that happened? That's interesting. But you wouldn't even be thinking about those things without that tool. Or you wouldn't have access to all that information. So Facebook, I looked it up today. If you had put $5,000 in Facebook stock just after it released into the stock market, I think it was in the 2010 time range or so, $5,000 would be worth $67,000 today without ever touching it, without ever doing anything. That's how interested we are in each other's business, because that business is just booming. It's just growing and growing based on our need to be connected that way. You guys all right? Okay, we okay? All right, I didn't know. So the thing about Facebook, I found that a lot of us spend a lot of time feeding the perception, right, that Facebook gives, because a lot of people are looking, and it matters what people think. I mean, you know, just it matters. We all care about what people think, but we put a lot of energy into, you know, creating that image because it goes out. A lot, some do, and I would just say, if we spend as much energy on that as we we spend as much energy on actually understanding what we're doing wrong and fixing ourselves and trying to improve ourselves and trying to take our personal selves to the next level, we'd be a lot better off than trying to push a perception rather than pushing the real thing into a better place. So back to Matthew 7, verse 2, it says, "For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again." So that verse there should really kind of scare all of us. That's a very hard truth, that the way we judge people is the way we're going to be judged. I don't want to be judged the way I judge people, because I'm hard on people, and I can be really, something. I don't want to be treated that way. So if we really all believe that and kept that verse in the forefront of our minds, we'd conduct ourselves a lot differently in our day to day. We'd be a lot less harsh to people, and we'd be a lot easier on people. You know, if I make a mistake, I know I've made a mistake. Let's say I drive too fast and get a speeding ticket. And I feel bad about that, right? I know I've gotten a speeding ticket. I know that hurts and I'm going to have to pay money, and it's not something I should have done. I surely shouldn't have got caught. Probably shouldn't have been doing it, but definitely shouldn't have got caught. So I'm feeling bad about that. So if I come home and I say I got a speeding ticket and I get an earful about getting a speeding ticket, that didn't help me a lot, because I know I got that ticket, right? I don't. but if I get understanding and go, "Oh, that's too bad. I hate that. That's going to stink paying that money." And wow, you need to slow down. That's a whole different scenario, right? And how do we treat each other? How do we treat each other in our church lives, in our family lives, in our work lives? How do we treat people when they stumble? Do we pounce on them because it's a moment to really get them, or do we? Or do we say, "Yeah, that's kind of tough. How can I help you through that? What can I do?" Because when I do stumble, I really want to be given that grace and that mercy, because I stumble enough to where I need it. Over in the book of Matthew, chapter 18, verse 21, Matthew 18, 21. Peter was looking for some direction here. So Peter was talking to Jesus, and it says here, "Then came Peter to him and said, 'Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me, and I forgive him? Till seven times?' Jesus said unto him, 'I say unto thee, until seven times, but until 70 times seven. Therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king, which would take account of his servants.'" Now Jesus is about to tell us something here. He's about to tell a story. Verse 24, he says, "And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought unto him, which owed him 10,000 talents. But for his..." Now, 10,000 talents was quite a bit of money. That was a lot of money. It was many years' wages for a wealthy person. He owed him 10,000 talents. "But for as much as he had not to pay, the Lord commanded him to be sold, his wife and his children and all that he had, and make the and the payment to be made. The servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, have patience with me. I will pay thee all. Then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion and loosed him and forgave him the debt. He went from the anger of selling your whole family and everything you own to having compassion and forgiving him the debt. So now the servant that was forgiven, the same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants which owed him 100 pence, a tiny fraction of the 10,000 that he owed. And he laid hands on him and he took him by the throat and he said, pay me that thou owest. And his fellow servants fell down at his feet and besought him, saying, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. And he would not, but went and cast him into prison till he should pay the debt. So when his fellow servants saw what was done, they were very sorry and came and told unto their Lord what was done. Then this Lord, after that, he had called him, said unto him, O thou wicked servant, I forgave thee of all that debt because thou desirest me. Shouldest thou not have had compassion on thy fellow servant, even as I had pity on thee? And his Lord was wroth and delivered him to the tormentors till he should pay all that was due unto him. So likewise shall my heavenly Father do also unto you, if from your hearts forgive not everyone his brother their trespasses. So what we've been forgiven of is much greater than 10,000 talents, 100,000 talents. What we've been forgiven of is great sin. And we hold grudges and we hold petty stuff with our fellow man and woman. And we carry that stuff around. And in the meantime, we've been forgiven of much more. No doubt God has held His judgment from us. No doubt we deserve judgment that's harsh and immediate. We've been shown mercy time after time. We are so quick to set ourselves above and put our judgment on others and to let our self-righteousness outweigh our grace and our forgiveness. I'll just say that our blind spot detector is the Holy Ghost, and the Holy Ghost will talk to us and let us know. And I say another blind spot detector are those who are close to us and those who are willing to tell us the truth. And we don't always want to hear it, but may we listen with humility and may we show mercy to those around us, that mercy may be shown to us. Thank you for your attention.